It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out today. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, we learn about the life and times of Chief Black Hawk, leader during Wisconsin's Black Hawk War. First, 1 week ago, a grand jury in Ferguson, Missouri, opted not to pursue a criminal case against the officer who shot and killed Michael Brown, an unarmed black teen. Now another grand jury, this time in Staten Island, New York, declined to pursue charges against a white New York police officer whose chokehold on Eric Garner, an unarmed black man, led to his death. The grand jury decision drew criticism from elected officials and sparked protests across the country. The emotion among protesters is demonstrated in this clip from NPR member station WNYC. In the clip, you hear Benjamin Carr, Eric Garner's stepfather, trying to calm a protester.
I was right there. I was right there. I was there, Mr. Garner, every step of the way. I have pictures of everything.
Come on in.
And you know, it's just gotten, I was doing everything peacefully, but it's gotten to the point where
you gotta keep the peace.
It's wrong.
I know.
We all are hurt.
It's like, where are we headed for? What's the future for me? What's the future for me? You know what I'm saying? For my child, for my son. What is his future?
With us now is David Goodman, reporter and breaking news blogger at The New York Times. David, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me, Veronica.
So in the clip there, we heard a protester expressing real hopelessness there about his future and the future of his children. What does that sentiment say to you? How does it match what you've heard at protests so far?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, he's really that feeling was echoed by Mayor Bill de Blasio in a news conference late last night where he, expressed similar feelings about his own son, saying that, you know, watching or the situation, the death of Eric Garner and what happened to him really made him think about his own family. So even the mayor sort of took a very personal and visceral approach to this decision in this whole case.
Well, let's step back a moment and fill listeners in who might not know the full story. Tell us about Eric Garner and how he died.
Well, sure. So Eric Garner, back in July, Eric Garner was approached on a Staten Island sidewalk, and the officers involved had prior interactions with him. He was sort of known in the neighborhood. He sold loose cigarettes, loosies as they're called, which are untaxed and, you know, undercut the local businesses. So there'd been a couple of complaints in the neighborhood, and the police department said that they were responding to a complaint on July 17th when a plainclothes team, what they call anti-crime teams, one of these plainclothes teams approached him and tried to place him under arrest, accusing him of selling these cigarettes again. And now he denied that he was doing it and said he didn't want to go. He says, and there's video of this. The most important aspect of this case, and really what contrasts it to what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, is that in this case there was video almost from the beginning of the police officer's interaction. You see them talking with him, and then you see them move to arrest him. And as Eric Garner refuses to be arrested, he says, it stops today, referring to their interactions with him. He says, you're always harassing me. And so as they try and place his hands behind his back, he refuses, and one officer comes around from behind and appears to try to put his arm underneath Eric Garner, who's a fairly tall man, about 6'3", about 350 pounds, and the officer, Daniel Pantaleo, is much shorter. And so he reaches underneath one arm and puts an arm over the top of Eric Garner's shoulder and then tries to pull him down. But in the course of struggling with him, and all of this is captured on video, it's pretty extraordinary, that arm of Officer Daniel Pantaleo goes up around Eric Garner's neck, and they fall to the ground, and the officer stays on top of Eric Garner for quite some time, holding his neck. And he eventually was pronounced dead at the hospital, and the medical examiner here in New York City said that he had died from that chokehold of this officer. And so there was a lot of expectation, especially among Eric Garner's family, that this case, when it was presented to a grand jury with this videotaped evidence in hand, that they certainly there was enough evidence to go forward with the trial. And so a lot of the outrage was, I think, felt in this case, particularly that even if there is video of an incident like this, the death of somebody who's unarmed and in an interaction with police, even in those cases, the justice system does not proceed forward with any kind of punishment for the officers.
And the chokehold that was used, I understand it was banned in 1993 or something like that?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's one of these things where here in New York, there's a lot of conversation around, well, the chokehold is not illegal, but it's banned by the police department. And, you know, it's a bit of a canard. You know, it's illegal for anyone to sort of put someone in a chokehold. You know, if I put you in a chokehold, that wouldn't be allowed. So, you know, for police officers, they have more latitude though to use force. But one of the and so they can, you know, do all kinds of things. They can use a gun, obviously. They can hit you with a baton if they feel that's necessary. But one thing they can't do, it's specifically prohibited in their patrol guide, is to use a chokehold. And the reason why it was banned in 1993 is because it's considered a dangerous maneuver. It's one that can quickly get out of control in the heat of a struggle, as what happened with Eric Garner. You know, you can restrict someone's breathing quite easily in this kind of hold. And so it was banned. But there's been a lot of debate within the police department, and the police union says that this was not a chokehold, even though all evidence in the video and the coroner's report point to the fact that it was.
And in the video, is it clear that Eric Garner is struggling, or does he seem to be struggling, or is there room for debate?
I mean, I think, you know, it goes, a lot of this goes to how officers perceive resistance. In this case, you know, he clearly was not willingly going with the two officers who are trying to arrest him. He says he will not be arrested. So at that point, when he says he won't be arrested, he's resisting. But he doesn't present an extreme level of force, or one that would, you know, necessitate being, you know, using deadly force in this case. And I don't think, you know, and the officer testified in the grand jury, he didn't believe that he was using deadly force. He thought that, you know, he was using an appropriate level of force. He thought that after he got off Eric Garner that he was going to be okay.
And there was another strand of this, that the Eric Garner, the protesters have taken up the chant, "I can't breathe," which apparently is something that Eric Garner tried to communicate.
That's right. I mean, not only did he try to communicate, I think one of the most disturbing facts that came out of this grand jury is that the officer did hear Eric Garner say, "I can't breathe," as he was on top of him with his arm around him. And in fact, Eric Garner, you know, said, "I can't breathe," multiple times, said about 11 times in the video that we've seen. And the fact that the officer heard it, he said, told him, suggested to him that Eric could breathe because he was able to get out the words. And so I think, you know, that also has been an emotional, has had a lot of sort of emotional resonance here. I mean, the cover of the Daily News today was big block letters, "We can't breathe," and in reference to the protesters that have taken this up as kind of a mantra.
What is known so far about how the grand jury arrived at this decision? Obviously, the proceedings are often very veiled with grand juries, but what is known?
There's not much known. And actually, in contrast to what happened after the Ferguson decision was reached, the DA here is prohibited by law from immediately releasing any of the you know, transcripts or anything that was said, many of the details of the proceeding. But he can request a special exemption from that. And in fact, he said yesterday that he was going to do that, to request specific details, specific information. That came out today. A judge's order responding to that request released very, very limited information, including, you know, how many weeks that it went on and how many witnesses they interviewed. But it turns out the DA did not request any of the transcripts, and really no information was shared about even what the charges were that the DA presented. We don't know what kind of charge he asked for, whether he tried to get a very serious charge like manslaughter, whether he went for something more minor like criminally negligent homicide, which would be a very low-level felony, or even if he tried to get a misdemeanor in this case. We just don't know that. We don't know at this point, you know, what other evidence was presented besides, we know there were four videos shown, including this one that we've been talking about. But really, a lot of it is still kind of a black box.
Now, as we wrap up, protesters in Missouri and President Obama were calling for body cams to record police actions. Now, in the Staten Island case, there were videos of the incident. What does this say, and what kind of conversation are you hearing about the effectiveness, then, of video evidence?
That's right. I think there's a lot of, actually, you've heard it repeated, you know, that there's a lot of frustration with the fact that, you know, one of the responses, it seems, from the mayor here and the police commissioner has been, they actually, in the morning that this was announced, they had a press conference touting the effectiveness of having these cameras on sort of improving relations between the police and the communities that they serve. And I think this case really underscores that this is not a panacea at all. I mean, just because you have images, it really just gives us another thing to argue about, another thing to look at from the different sides that people bring to an argument. And so, you know, we'll be arguing over videos more in the future, but it doesn't mean that they'll offer more clarity necessarily.
David, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
That was David Goodman, reporter and breaking news blogger at The New York Times.